Hi there, it's Sarah Raymond, and I am beyond excited to share some news with you today. My new book, You Are Not Broken, A Compassionate Guide to Uncovering Inner Wisdom and Transforming Your Life with Hypnotherapy, is now available. This book is a deep dive into the very practices offered here and with my one-on-one clients, combining hypnotherapy, somatic healing, and trauma-informed coaching to help you release those nagging beliefs that tell you you're not enough. It's filled with practical step-by-step exercises designed to transform limiting beliefs and embrace your true whole self. Whether you're struggling with anxiety, perfectionism, or just seeking a deeper sense of self-acceptance, You Are Not Broken offers the tools and insights you need to uncover your inner wisdom and live a more compassionate and fulfilling life. Head over to Amazon and get your copy of You Are Not Broken today. Thank you for your continued support, and I look forward to hearing feedback from this amazing community. Stay curious and compassionate, and remember, you are whole. You are enough.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I had physical pain, not in a way that I was kind of like re-traumatizing myself, but really just more as a message, because just in the same way that we get hunger cues, so if you haven't eaten, your body will send you a message. We also hold physical symptoms or responses to deep beliefs or blocked energy or unprocessed trauma in our body too. So I got the signal that it's like, oh, this is a thing. This is actually affecting how I'm feeling physically. And then month by month, things just started switching off. So like this band across my chest that I named anxiety back then, that was just constant, even when I was on the beach or, you know, trying to like relax or play with my kids or read a book or even watch Netflix, this constant band was there that then one day it like literally switched off. And that was the first little miracle that it was like, oh my gosh, like that's gone.
Philippa Bellette, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast today.
Thank you, Les. I'm excited to be here.
It's nice to talk to somebody on a different hemisphere. You're in Australia. I'm on the East Coast of the States.
Nice.
Maybe you could tell me who wins the ball game tonight. Or it doesn't work like that, does it?
I don't watch sports, so okay. My husband Chris might have to tell you that.
You're a clinical nutritionist, you're a functional medicine practitioner, and your book, Ending Burnout?
Ending Body Burnout.
Ending Body Burnout. And that's also the title of your podcast that you host with your husband?
Yeah, correct. Yes.
Okay.
And the name of our signature program as well, Ending Body Burnout.
Okay. Well, I guess let's double click. What is that referring to? And why do you have a podcast called Ending Body Burnout?
Yeah, it was born from my own story. Before I go into my story, I might talk about burnout first, because we're all very familiar, I think, with the term burnout. A lot of people experience it. It is, I think, the pandemic of our time. So the term burnout is often referred to in the workplace, especially when you're burning the candle at both ends, doing too much, not getting enough rest and recovery. We coined the term body burnout because in functional medicine, we also look at what's actually happening at the body systems level. And then even below that, why did the body systems burn out? So sometimes people feel burnt out, but then they go on a holiday and they come home or they get a good night's sleep or a few good night's sleep and they're bounced back feeling good. We work with a lot of people that do that. They might go on a holiday, but their body systems are so burnt out that even a holiday, a week or two away, isn't enough to reset, recharge their body because there's some serious burnout issues happening at a cellular level. So that's what body burnout is about.
So what does that mean? Like, what is the, I guess, technical terminology of burnout? Is that just like, you mean you're like stressed out, you're fatigued?
Yeah, like burnout's it's a chronic stress issue. It's a, you've got too much on your plate, there's so much overwhelm, and it doesn't just happen in the workplace either. It could be parenting can be really overwhelming. It could be juggling all the things. We find that like both men and women experience it, but women have this invisible load that has stemmed from generations of patriarchy where they feel like they have to hold a lot of things in their, on their shoulders. And like the body, we're not robots. We can't operate in an overdoing patterns for very long. I mean, our body's pretty resilient, but there'll come a point where our body systems are actually going to start burning out. And then it's going to send us some pretty powerful messages, usually through pain, whether it's mental, emotional, or physical, to tell us to stop, to have a look deep within in terms of what's actually happening, what's stemming this, these busy patterns in the first place.
Okay. So is this, working in the functional medicine world, is this like the thing that you focus on where folks come in and they're basically just dealing with chronic stress and you're trying to navigate how to get them to not be stressed? Does that mean you're like intervening with lifestyle changes where they have to quit their job or end their relationships? Or
we go even deeper than that. So when I first started practicing functional medicine, and this was part of my own health journey, I might actually talk about that because then that'll explain
sure
how deep we actually go to resolve this, these stress patterns. Before I had children, so my oldest is now 12, and even before my first baby, I was definitely running those overachieving, overdoing patterns. Even from high school, I think I started getting good grades and I'm like, oh, I didn't even try to do that. Oh, but it feels really good because I'm getting all this external validation now. And I'm like, oh, maybe I will keep doing this. So it fed these overachieving patterns. I even ended up doing a PhD simply because I had lecturers tell me that, like, you're smart, you should do it. So I was running a lot of like overachieving patterns even before I had my baby. But I feel like the pregnancy and the birth, and it was quite a traumatic birth and a very long labor, and there was physical damage to my body as well. It was almost like the last straw on the camel's back. And after I had my baby, every month, so she was getting older, and I was looking at other moms, and, you know, they were kind of like getting better as the child was getting older, but I was actually getting worse. So every month I was accumulating more and more. I call them weird health issues because it was the type of health issues that you present at the GP and they're like, I don't know, all your bloods look fine, so you must be fine.
Like, maybe what? It's just... Can you give some examples? Or
so nothing, weird health issues in terms of there wasn't any diagnosable disease from a medical standpoint. So I definitely had anxiety, although I probably wasn't honest with the GP when I first went that that was the case because I didn't even know I had it. It wasn't something that I was taught to navigate or to know what it looked like. I had a lot of gut issues, hormone issues, histamine intolerance, which I didn't discover that that was actually a thing until a few years later. Chemical sensitivities, chronic back pain. Some days I couldn't even pick my baby up because my body was so inflamed. And, you know, so obviously there were things happening in my body and in my mind that weren't right. But there wasn't, from the GP standpoint or the medical system, there wasn't much help there because I didn't fit into a box. So I started looking into natural therapies. First of all, I changed the way that I ate and nutrition and became a clinical nutritionist and changed the lifestyle things, and things got better until I had my second baby, and then all my health issues flared up again. And I'm like, what? This doesn't make sense. I'm eating so healthy and I'm going to bed on time and I don't have toxins in my house anymore. But that's where I then discovered functional medicine. And so that's where I could actually run some lab tests on my body and discovered that I had a whole host of things. So adrenal fatigue, detox issues, parasites, bacterial overgrowth, candida, really low dopamine levels. And as I started supporting those body systems, things got better. Until COVID. So COVID 2020 came along. I'm pretty sure everyone has their own COVID story. that it was this incubator of chronic stress for a lot of people. And so the uncertainty of COVID and the lockdowns and homeschooling my children, my body just went into a panic and went back into fight flight. And the weird thing was, is that this time nothing physical helped. So I'm kind of circling back to your original question. So I'd come so far with lifestyle changes and then standard functional medicine, but I was totally perplexed that I'm like, I'm using everything in my toolbox and none of my symptoms are budging this time. And so I knew that I hadn't got to the deepest root cause as to why my body systems were burnt out again and not functioning very well. And the deepest level was the way that I was believing in the stories that I had about myself. So I ended up having a core unconscious belief that I was weak and incapable, which made a lot of sense when I discovered that, because it's like, yeah, COVID is a big uncertainty ball of change. So is motherhood and everything else I'd experienced earlier. And so my body continued sending me signals until I got the message. It's like, we love you. Thank you so much for like doing all the lovely lifestyles and the supplements and the lab testing, but you're still kind of band-aiding what is actually causing the body burnout in the first place.
What was there an intervention you did that allowed you to see that?
It's actually funny. I was on someone else's podcast. He was in our business group and he had a podcast called the Insecurity Project. And I'm like, oh, I've had some personal growth and, you know, I can share some things. And on the podcast, I said, feel free to coach me if you want to. I don't know why I said that. It must like, I think it was divine intervention that I even like put myself into that position. But he mentioned a few things in a loving, kind way that just made me start crying. Like, not on the podcast, but for 2 weeks later, I was just like, the waterworks were turned on. And I'm like, there's something underneath my patterns and the way that I'm behaving and thinking and being that I need to look at. So that was sort of like the first little light bulb moment.
What did he say that true, if you're comfortable?
What did he say? I think I was talking about boundaries. It's like, yeah, I have really, okay. So one of my patterns too, when I was healing, just like from a lifestyle functional medicine point of view, was that I was still running overachieving, overdoing perfectionism patterns where it's like, I got candida. I'm not going to eat any sugar at all for 6 months. And like, I would do it. So I was pretty hardcore. It's like toxins are evil. Quick kids, we got to put our masks on. No, actually I wasn't that extreme, but you know, it was almost like petrol fumes getting into my car. Oh, so I was like, I was trying to heal, doing all the lovely things, you know, from a lifestyle point of view that is just like healthy for human beings. But I was doing it in a way that I was still running perfectionism patterns. So I felt like I had to put fences up around me and I was living a very restricted life. And I think he just noticed that. He noticed that in the way that I was describing like how I healed and like how great it is to like eat healthy and blah, 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 blah. It wasn't from a place of flow and deep love and trust of self. It was from a place of fear. Yeah. So that was interesting. I think he used the word boundaries, or maybe he said, it sounds like you're managing yourself. He's like, it's not nice to be managed. Imagine a boss that's like micromanaging you. Ooh, yuck.
So he basically helped hold the mirror up for you.
Exactly.
And then,
yes.
And then what did you do?
Yeah.
Because there's no supplement for that.
There's no supplement. Wouldn't it be amazing if there was? Because it's hard work. It's hard work, but it's the most beautiful and kind work that you can do for yourself. But it's hard initially because it's like, what am I going to find underneath the surface? I've heard this statistic thrown around. I haven't found an actual paper around it, but I mean, you might have heard it too, Les. But a lot of there's a saying that only about 5% of people actually do the deep inner work, because most people get scared. Most people are like, oh yeah, no, everything's okay. Don't look into there. Like, who knows what can of worms we're going to find. So stepping into it with courage and kindness, and I ended up working with the coach that I was on the podcast with, and he helped me understand that there yeah, deep core unconscious beliefs. Now, if they're lovely and kind and trusting of self, then the default is health in all areas, not just in the body and mind, but health in your finances, in your business, in your relationships. And I realized that not only had my body crumbled again and it had become a pattern of like, get a bit better. And then it's like, ah, symptoms are back, get a bit better, ah, symptoms are back. But I also saw the pattern showing up in my marriage, in my parenting. Our business was really struggling, even though from a strategy point of view, we were doing all the things. So there was a lot of pain points. And the process that I went through that we now share with our clients as well is like, what is the deepest root cause belief that is driving dysfunctional thoughts, feelings, behavioral patterns, and also acting as an internal tiger inside of your body, constantly dysregulating your nervous system, which then impacts the body system?
Yeah, I think that's really common. Philippa, did you get insight on where the stories or beliefs that you had cultivated, like where they stem from?
Yeah. And this is, yeah, so for me, like these beliefs, so before the age of 7, we're little sponges and we're absorbing all the information around us. We're also sense-making creatures. So a child and an adult is always asking what just happened and what does it mean about me? But especially as a child before the age of 7, they're very egocentric. And so if something distressing happens, even if it might not look distressing from an adult point of view, but it's distressing for the child, they generally make something unkind. Like they make an unkind belief or accusation about themselves that they're implicated in why this is happening to them. So I was looking before the age of 7, and I found this really hard initially because I'm like, I don't know. Like I had a lovely childhood, happy childhood. There was no trauma. I was very well loved. My needs were met. There were some memories that kept popping up in different ways as a pattern. So there were a few times where as a little kid I was up on a stage, and I was actually, this earliest one was in a church presentation. So I had a little talk to say, and all the other kids had little talks to say as well, and they were like all the parents out in the congregation. So I thought, if I memorize mine, my parents are going to be so proud of me, and like, wouldn't it be cool if I could memorize it? And then when I stood on the stage, I couldn't remember anything. So I went bright red, burst out crying. And then I had to sit on the stage and watch every other little child come up and give their talk perfectly. So in that moment, my little brain's like, there must be something wrong with me. Why can't I do it like they are? Totally discounting that most of them were reading the talk anyway. But then there were several events that happened very close, like around the same year, that same pattern kept showing up. So initial accusation that I made was, I must be weak. I must be incapable. There must be something wrong with me. And as other things continued to happen.
And then that leads to like overachievement to try to prove your worth to yourself or to the world.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it didn't really show up until in high school, but it definitely set in stone an anxious disposition and a shy disposition so initially it was more like I held back and I was quiet. And, you know, if someone asked me to share my opinion, even as a kid, I'd be like, can't do that, too scary. So, and then I found external validation later on in high school where I'm like, oh, when I put some effort behind my work and I get good grades, then I get praise. Oh, this feels good. And so that overcompensated those busy, overachieving patterns, because essentially I was actually just trying to hide from the greatest fear I had about myself. Hide it from myself, but also hide it from others and judgment.
It's crazy. So these events that, you know, from an onlooker might not look like it's that big of a deal, because when you think about, I don't know, like, other things that could happen to a kid that suck. It's like not that sucky, like no physical harm. There's just a long list of you could objectively make that's worse. But to the mind, to the young mind, it's like the worst thing that happened to you is the worst thing that happened to you.
Exactly. And like
the response, the system we have, the tool that our nervous system has to deal with it is a very blunt object. with, you know, and it's like, I'll just flip a few switches here and then this cascade will create. So you think that the physical manifestations you've had around the COVID time where your health deteriorated were all really born out of the dysregulated nervous system that's just stuck at that kid on stage crying?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, like even the way that you position that question. I'm like, hell yeah, I do believe that, because I saw the evidence of when I started reprogramming and clearing that belief. I will use the word magic. It felt very magical that things, even like physical issues, so it changed. Because in my head previously, I was very science driven. I'm like, I need to see the data on the lab test. By the way, I still love lab testing and we still do practice standard functional medicine, but only with the deeper metaphysical stuff. Otherwise, it ends up just being a Band-Aid. But yeah, it was like, oh, I can't see it. I can't see it. I can feel it, but there's no data on the sheet. But I just trusted the process. I just trusted the process that, okay, I can see that this is a thing. And also when I identified the deepest root cause belief, my body told me as well. Like I had physical pain, not in a way that I was kind of like re-traumatizing myself, but really just more as a message, because just in the same way that we get hunger cues. So if you haven't eaten, your body will send you a message. We also hold physical symptoms or responses to deep beliefs or blocked energy or unprocessed trauma in our body too. So I got the signal that it's like, oh, this is a thing. This is actually affecting how I'm feeling physically. And then month by month, things just started switching off. So like this band across my chest that I named anxiety back then, that was just constant, even when I was on the beach or, you know, trying to like relax or play with my kids or read a book or even watch Netflix, this constant band was there. But then one day it like literally switched off. And that was the first little miracle that it was like, oh my gosh, like that's gone. And I didn't take a supplement for that. The biggest physical shift though, that was just like, was I'd had heartburn, which was part of a histamine response as well. And again, there were periods of time where it was better when I started doing functional medicine, but it came back with vengeance during COVID. So this heartburn, these gut issues were going on for about 20 years. So this was like a chronic symptom. And when it came back in COVID, it was daily. Like it was every day. It was every meal that I ate. I used to be able to manage it by eating a low histamine diet, but then it started, like the symptoms were just like anytime I ate anything that I ate, it's like bang, back again. So in the journey, things were changing. Like my relationship was improving. We were even making more money in our business, and like, so our business was thriving. But I still had this histamine heartburn thing going on. I'm like, what is that? What's going on? And I got a message that I still wasn't fully trusting my body. I still wasn't fully trusting it, that it could function healthily, innately on its own. And so the thing that I did as an action step to change that was I was taking a supplement, I think. And like, again, I love supplements. We prescribe them to our clients all the time, if and as needed. But the end goal is we come off them once you're healed, and you shouldn't have to be on a bucket load of supplements to function and to be healthy for the rest of your life. But I wasn't taking my own medicine. I was actually like using the supplements as almost like a, oh no, if I stop them, even if I trial to see how I go without them, things are going to get worse again. So I just ripped the Band-Aid off and I'm like, okay, I'm going to make an agreement to myself, a promise, that I'm going to go off all supplements for 3 months. 3 months was just like an arbitrary, it felt like a nice timeline to experiment with how my body was without them. And that the moment that I decided to make that decision, my heartburn and histamine issues disappeared.
Really? And maybe one of the supplements was causing it.
Well, no, it wasn't. Okay, the random thing though was the supplement was a female hormone herb, because, okay, this is a little bit segue, But I was using it not for gut function. I was actually using it because when I took it, I had beautiful clear skin. So I was using it as a hideout. I was like, oh, no, I can't stop that because what if I get pimples and acne? And, you know, I was working with clients every day and like they're going to see my face and they're going to think I'm a no good practitioner. Blah, 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 blah. Like all these little stories we tell ourselves. And by the way, like since then, I have taken that on and off as needed. I actually found that every time I got COVID, my cycle went a bit funny. So I went back on the MenstruCare, the supplement, and it definitely wasn't connected to the heartburn. But why I feel like it wasn't the supplement specifically was that night when I had dinner, and it was a very high histamine meal, by the way. It had like rich tomato sauce in it, like a tomato-based gluten-free pasta. And it was 3 days old, so it was like leftovers as well. And previously I'd been eating it, getting the worst heartburn. That night when I was eating my food and I was talking to my body at the same time, like, hey, like I've taken action. Trust me. I trust you. You're strong. You're capable. And I felt the most beautiful sensation from the top of my throat to the bottom of my gut. So like literally like ripples of light and love. And that continued every time I ate for 3 days.
Is that when you earlier you alluded to the idea of like you reprogrammed? Is that how you did it, by just kind of like having that kind of mantra for yourself? Or were there other reprogramming tactics?
Yeah, it was pretty simple what I did. Like from a structured point of view, every morning when I woke up, affirmations get thrown around. I'd like to call them embodied declarations, where like viscerally, unconsciously you're feeling it, you're having an emotional response to it rather than just looking at the mirror and saying, I am good enough. Yay. Today's going to be a great day. Because that's only going to work with 5% of your conscious mind. So every morning I just had this ritual where I would put my earphones on and I found some really inspiring motivational movie soundtracks. And I would go through my day and the aspects of my life and just, yeah, repetitively feed in the new belief that I am strong and capable and this is how it shows up in my body and in my life. Visualization was really important as well. So what this new me actually felt like, looked like, what she was doing, what she was creating, how she was being. So they were kind of like the two structured daily things. But I think the big thing was taking big action in real life as well, because the unconscious mind was like, yeah, okay, so in the safety of your bedroom in the morning, you're saying and thinking these things and it's wonderful and beautiful. But what happens when you're out in the big wide world? So it's sort of like, you know, there were pressure tests where how am I going to respond to this thing? And am I going to respond in a way that I deeply love and trust and accept myself? Or am I going to go and fall back into old neural pathways of being weak and incapable? But it came, I don't know, the combination of both of those, it didn't feel like I had to majorly force change in my life. It kind of just happened as a natural consequence.
Well, those strategies are powerful. I mean, the affirmations, visualization, that shit's real. I mean,
yeah,
for some people. I mean, if you are doing it with the intention that it's going to help you and you believe it, the mind is pretty freaking powerful.
It is. It's so powerful. There's so much research around visualization and...
Well, just the fact that the placebo has to be controlled for with studies, it's because it's real. It's just like modern medicine, it's viewed as like an obstacle to it as opposed to a tool.
Yeah, I love that. So true.
That's a pretty awesome story. So what I want to know, what was that supplement, the female hormone supplement that helped your skin? Just curious.
Well, actually, no, you guys have Metagenics in America as well. It's called MenstruCare.
What's like the main thing in it, or is it a big blend?
So it's got about 15 different female hormone herbs, like Vitex, Chase Tree, Horny Goatweed. It's lovely.
Horny Goatweed is such a great name of an herb.
I love that.
I've never taken it, but man, what a cool name. You know, it's, you mentioned something that I also have felt like, I think I've made a ton of progress. I had like my own healing story and definitely came to a point where there was a realization that there were more underlying belief structures that were definitely playing a role in at least like getting better and like allowing myself, like that trust that you alluded to, trust your ability to heal. And also, I've had a lot of success with supplements, and I've had a lot of probably wasted money and expensive urine from them too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I found myself in those moments where it's like, there's a little fear there to like stop. Like, what will happen if I stop this? And I'm not well practiced at the 3 month off technique. That's interesting to me. I would like to be able to do that, but I don't know if it, maybe it is fear. It's like, I don't want to. What, you know, I might have to look at that myself. I mean, maybe if I have definitely decreased. I remember when I was in the throes of it and I had Lyme, mold, parasite. I had a big mess of stuff manifesting and all kinds of stuff. Also had a big histamine response. And it was like, I would try it. You're getting this mode where you're like, I'll try anything. And you just kept trying things. And then it gets to a point where it's like, well, some things are helping and some things aren't, but I don't even know which ones are the ones that are helping. I don't know which ones that aren't. And it's like, you're afraid to make changes. But I wonder how many people, because I know in the functional medicine world, granted, they do seem to ask better questions than like allopathic care. They, I feel like allopathic care almost always gets the wrong answer because they never have the right question.
Yep.
I mean, they'll keep you alive today. I mean, they can work miracles. If you're going to die today and the goal is to not die today, they can do miracles. But with the chronic illness stuff, they seem to be just poorly equipped. And part of that is just the framework of the questions. And functional medicine, I think, definitely shines there, at least in my experience and that I hear of others. But also, it could also lead to a lot of supplements. And I think a lot of people do get, I don't want to say trapped, but you get in a place where you're juggling a lot of things. And some of them can be helpful. But like you say, ultimately, there could be this dysautonomia to some extent. You know, your nervous system could just be like jacked up for something that there's just no supplement to help. And there's no doctor out there that can show you on a lab what's going on.
Yeah. Yep. So true.
So how do you propose, like if you're working with somebody and you suspect that, let's say they've been dealing with something for a while, some physical manifestation that creates, you know, suffering for them. How do you suggest to a patient to go down this like deep emotional road?
So I have a bunch of agreements for myself as a practitioner and coach. And if I'm going to work longer term with someone, like there's a short term, if someone just wants some lab tests and, you know, a protocol, there you go. But, you know, you're on your own after that. My promise to myself is that I am not a Band-Aid practitioner. So anyone that comes into our world who wants the ongoing support to actually heal themselves at a deep root level is like, it's, we call it the metaphysical. We're going to work on the metaphysical root causes as well. And you can also engage in the physical support because it does help. Like both you and I, we just shared stories where our body did respond to the physical support, but it's not long lasting if you're not doing the deeper root cause support. And that goes beyond just some lifestyle changes. That's the looking deep into your unconscious mind. And is there any baggage happening in there that is causing dysregulation? So I'm the straight shooter.
So are you doing that yourself? Are you basically like doing some form of coaching where you're asking the questions to try to uncover those deep beliefs?
Yeah. So my husband is a master NLP coach and transformational coach. And I also, after my magical experience as well, became a coach, transformational coach, NLP practitioner and trauma therapist. So together we work with our clients and we've created a process and a structure as well. So in the form of our online portal where there's some intelligent coaching questions to ask to dig into what is the deepest root cause belief that you have, and then set up the framework to reprogram it. We've also added in, like I mentioned, the two things I was doing that was quite simple, but I found that a lot of people in body burnout, like their body is somatically manifesting so much baggage from their unconscious mind. So we do tap into, you know, kind of like somatic type work to reprogram, clear trauma, blocked emotion as well.
So you're doing this face-to-face? Is this virtual or?
Online. We have an online practice.
Okay. The whole thing's online?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
So NLP, that's neuro-linguistic programming? Did I say that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And then a transformational coach, what does that refer to?
Transformational coach is, how do I describe that? Look, most people who do transformational coaching have some sort of like NLP certification underneath it as well. But essentially it's outcome focused. So it's future focused rather than, for example, a therapist might be someone who takes you back into the past and that's kind of where you stay. It's like you make sense of what's happening, which I think is really important. And we do that too. You make sense of what's happening and then you realize that this is why you do what you do. But there aren't the steps to get you into who you want to be. So transformational coaching is more around, yeah, future focus, outcome focused.
Okay. And you're doing this like adjacent to all the more traditional, like, are you low on a vitamin? That kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
more traditional, like functional tests and approaches.
Yeah. And I find like the functional test supplement protocols, I actually find it helps build people's capacity, both like from an energy motivation point of view to do the deeper inner work, which is hard and challenging, but also it helps to calm down the system as well. So that it's like, okay, it's safe to look now. It's safe to do this work. So it pretty much just speeds up the healing process.
Are there any things that people, that you give people that specifically get them to calm down to where there's like a relaxing component where they might be more open to, I don't know, allow the things that are deep embedded to come up?
From a physical point of view, like, and again, this is just purely based on what the person needs. But if someone's in adrenal fatigue or has really low dopamine or serotonin, adrenaline, then I do find when you start supporting those body systems physically, it can really help. So vitamin B is really important. Again, what you need, how much you need is sort of dependent on what the lab tests show. Adaptogenic herbs can be really lovely for the adrenals, like licorice root, withania, Korean ginseng.
None of the horny herbs?
Don't usually do the horny herbs okay. in that first instance. And the brain, so amino acids like tyrosine is really good for supporting dopamine and adrenaline production. And
tyrosine
tryptophan.
Is like the base amino acid that converts to those. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they convert into dopamine and adrenaline and serotonin. So tryptophan, 5-HTP, really lovely nutrients that help to support production of serotonin as well. So they're probably like the two main body systems that help to calm things down, build capacity. And then, you know, if people have gut issues or detox issues, we work through those when the time is right. And that's going to help with inflammation and stress in the body levels as well.
And I assume those go hand in hand. I mean, when you're under stress, the GI system seems to be one of the first things to be affected. So I assume most of the people that you work with, they got something going on in the GI.
Yeah. The three most common symptoms we see with our clients in practice who are burnt out, energy, mood, and gut issues. Yeah.
So those are like common links of the like the physical manifestation. After doing some of the digging that you do with these different modalities, whether it be the NLP or the trauma therapy or somatic work or whatever, are there common threads that you see where like most people are dealing with one of just a few things? Like, you know, you mentioned like you had these habits, these beliefs about yourself. Like, are there common beliefs that you feel like many people share?
It's so interesting. Probably at least every month, we'll get a client where it's like, wow, that's a new one. probably the most common one. I mean, quite broad is I'm not good enough.
Right.
But even then I encourage clients to go deeper because that's usually where people land first. It's just like we hear it all the time on like memes and Instagram feeds and stuff as well. And sometimes that is the deepest belief, but then it's like, I'm not good enough. Or is there something even more cutting than that? I'm unlovable, very common, unworthy or undeserving. Weak and incapable comes up a lot. And then there's some random ones like I'm different, I'm replaceable. It's really dependent on the experience that that little child had and what they made it mean about them.
How long does it usually take in your experience to like move the needle on these things? Are these like they sit down and half hour later they have a magic moment where it's like, oh, that's why I get stressed over this? Or and then
usually
all this
not.
Tension leaves their body. And
it's such a good question. And I think it's really dependent on the person's capacity to move through the process. So if someone enters the process and the very first process is looking at your dysfunctional patterns in the present day. So like, what are all the patterns that are showing up in your body, in your behavior, in your relationships, your life? Because that'll be gold data to then find a deeper belief underneath all of those patterns. And then the next step is going back into the past. So what is the deepest root cause belief? What must I believe about myself in order to behave in this way with these patterns? And when was the first time? So now you're kind of digging into the memory bank. Look, we've had clients, we sort of, when we were setting up our program, that could be done in 4 weeks. Like 4 weeks is a solid enough time to be thorough enough to take full responsibility that you created what you currently have, even if it happened unconsciously, which it often does, and also to have the courage and kindness to look in. For some people, it takes longer though. Like we have clients where that might take 6 months to get to that point. But they're like, it's almost like you got to work with the nervous system as well and creating the safety to be able to move into looking.
And is this like meeting once a week kind of thing virtually?
We have, yeah, we do like weekly group coaching depending on.
Oh, you do this in a group?
So we it's a hybrid. So we do one-on-one and that might be monthly or weekly depending on the amount of support that the person chooses. But then we also have the weekly group coaching as a supplement. And then we, like people are working, our clients are working through their, we call them outlets, which is essentially the coaching journaling questions to like work into what is the deepest root cause. So it could be daily touch points for the person.
Okay. I would imagine that for some people, I'm sorry, for some people that group component would be really useful, like not being alone in it.
I love it. There's research as well. I think it's James Maskell. Have you heard of him? Maskell is American.
There's a lot of people here. We're not. Like,
there's a lot of people in America.
There's like 350 million people here. Just because someone's in America doesn't mean they know all the Americans, Philippa.
True.
It doesn't
sometimes,
work like that. I don't know how many people are over in Australia, but there's a lot of people over here.
We live on a very small island at the bottom of Australia called Tasmania. And when people know that, they're like, oh, do you know such and such? And like, Tasmania is small, but it's still like a lot of people. Anyway, there's a lot of research to show that healing is actually more powerful in a community and in a group than done one-on-one.
Yeah, I mean, I would think a lot of people at like one of those common things I think that people might deal with on those like deep emotional levels are like feeling like you don't fit in or you
yes.
don't have, you know, you don't have your tribe, and having that group component probably means a lot for them in that process.
Yeah. You realize that you're not weird because no child comes out of their childhood unscarred in some way. Mm. Even if you had the perfect childhood, the child is still at some point going to make something unkind. Like they're going to create some sort of belief about themselves that later on in life, if they choose to, they can let go of that, reprogram it. But yeah, it's nice when you can all come together and it's like, oh, and also to do the deeper work, you can't do self-awareness when there's self-judgment. So being able to see other people having similar issues, having similar root causes, running similar patterns, It's like, oh, I'm not the only one. And actually, this is not that it's normal, but it's very common. It's common.
Easier to have like self-compassion when you see it in someone else again.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So you can dial down the angst that you're like, you're so weird and this is taboo and I can't talk about it. And also we create space where we can have truthful conversations that not a lot of people can have with their spouse or with their friend, because there is judgment when you're talking to someone in your life that loves you. They want the best for you. And so you can't speak the truth often in those conversations. Otherwise, it gets messy.
It sounds like you have kind of dialed the process in. Like you're pulling from a lot of different things from your background and from your own path. Like you have a pretty nice toolkit to draw from.
I think so.
Do you ask people, like when somebody comes in, I remember talking to one of the functional doctors that I've seen for years, and he would talk about how you could have two people come in and they have like the same issues and they might be given very different protocols because like what they're ready to do. Like some people, kind of like you, they'll take that type A attitude to like, I'll do everything. Give me all the things. I'll do it right now. And some people need like, just can you add 5 minutes of sun to your day? Let's not change anything. Nothing dramatic. Like, do you go over those kind of things with your clients where it's like, there's a couple ways we could go about this and then get a feel for where they're at, what kind of person they are, and how aggressive or chill they need to be about their approach?
Yeah. Again, yes, for sure. So there are some people who are, you know, they come in high capacity and they're like, yep, I can like balance the physical support and the lifestyle. And a lot of our clients have already made big lifestyle changes from a healthy point of view anyway. So it's kind of like, you know, most people are eating healthy. Most people know about sleep hygiene and, you know, they're trying to get good sleep. Most people are, you know, moving their body. It's more the not knowing what's happening at a body systems level. So being able to straddle the supplement taking and any tweaks that we need to make from a lifestyle point of view. And then also straddling the metaphysical deeper healing. Now, if someone comes in and they're really low capacity, then yeah, like, I mean, there's still some non-negotiables to get the results, but the time frame or where they might start and then they stack something else on later can be very individualized depending on the person. So if someone's really overwhelmed and they're like, oh, I want to do this, but I'm like having so much resistance to looking into my past and looking into my unconscious mind. Ah! I'm like, okay. Just give me some spit, wee, and poo samples. Let's start supporting your body. Knowing that the other side is non-negotiable because I'm not a Band-Aid practitioner. Now, you're very welcome to go and work with someone who just gives you supplements, but I think you came into our world because that you intuitively know that that's not what you need. It's what's going to help, but it's not what you deeply need in order to unravel and end your body burnout. But like having that leverage to move into the physical support is really, I think, like helpful for those people who are very overwhelmed or low capacity. And then as their body is starting to feel better and their mind is starting to feel better, then they have more confidence, more space, spaciousness in their system to be able to do the deeper work. And also too, like I find that the deeper inner work, people who are lower capacity can get stuck when it's like, I got to do some writing about this now, and I've got to like, you know, spend some time really processing and thinking about this. In those situations, if they're really, there's unconscious resistance, they're not progressing, then it's like, what's the smallest thing that you can do to help move the needle? And sometimes it literally might be like, watch all the little mini lessons. So we have little lessons that take people through the process in our online program. And, you know, just work through those. Don't have to change anything yet. You don't even have to write anything. You don't even have to maybe like consciously think about anything, but putting yourself into the space of transformation is going to start moving the needle for you.
Gotcha. Do you incorporate the use of any like of the psychedelic compounds or things that are people using a lot to like, I don't know, maybe put aside inhibition or whatever to tap into these things that we hide from ourselves? Or
not really. Do you mean like psilocybin?
Yeah, possibly. Or...
Yeah, so in Australia, it's illegal.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yes. Gotcha. So no.
Okay.
I mean, if someone can access it themselves, they could if they want to.
So that's illegal there. What about, is cannabis illegal there? Or?
It is only if it's prescribed by a GP. There's different forms of cannabis. Like there are some that can just be bought off the shelf, but the more therapeutic is, yeah, written by a GP.
Okay. So you guys don't use any of that kind of stuff? For...
No.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. I wonder what other rules are different there. I know very little bit about Australia and definitely nothing about Tanzania. Is that what you said it was? Tanzania?
Tanzania's in Africa.
So I'm sorry. Tasmania.
Tasmania.
I think of what was the cartoon? The Tasmanian Devil when I was little.
Yeah, the Tasmanian Devil. That's where I'm from.
Is that a real animal there?
Yes, but it doesn't look anything like the scary. It's actually probably like a small dog-sized animal. And it's very, very scared of humans. And it doesn't
spin around like a tornado and causing havoc like in the cartoon?
No.
Well, that's disappointing. I wish I didn't ask that. I should have just stayed with that nice vision of the Tasmania Devil. That's funny.
That is funny.
From the more like lifestyle things, what do you find generally if somebody comes in and they're not feeling well for a myriad of reasons, and there is like, you know, clearly some emotional stuff, but, you know, maybe that's going to take some time. What do you think are the things that like move the needle that are like the lowest hanging fruit from a lifestyle perspective that you feel like really help people? I know you mentioned already supporting adrenal fatigue. I'm not exactly sure what adrenal fatigue really means. You mentioned like basic B vitamins that I guess are central to like energy production. What are the things like your go-tos out of the gate before you get into like real more nuanced stuff or do a lot of testing?
Yeah. Okay. I'd say sleep is number one because you can't heal if you're not sleeping. Now, sometimes people have trouble, like physiological trouble to go to sleep. So that's dealt with as we're working on body systems and the deeper root causes. But if someone's staying up late, working,
nothing else matters.
Yeah. You know, then from a sleep hygiene point of view, start going to bed earlier, maybe even switching off the screens an hour or two before going to bed so your body has the chance to wind down. Because it's very, very hard to heal a body when you're not getting sufficient sleep. Nutrition's huge as well because we are what we eat or we are what we assimilate. So if someone's like some low-hanging fruit, like how much water are you drinking? We are made up of a lot of water in our body. So if you're very dehydrated, again, it's hard to heal a body that's dehydrated. This is like a loose generalization advice, but generally 30 kilos of body weight. I don't know what that would be in pounds.
66 pounds, I think.
Okay, yeah, is a liter of water, which is it gallons? Do you guys go by gallons instead of liters?
We use gallons. I don't think anybody's drinking a gallon of water a day, though. I don't know.
Okay, maybe that's like, not what a liter is then. If you're an American listener, do the math.
I think there's about four, there's almost 4 liters in a gallon.
Okay.
How many liters are you recommending people drink?
So if a 60 kilo, whatever pound that is, would be about 2 liters. So for me, that would be about eight glasses of water a day, which is pretty standard. Now, if someone's quite very tall or big structured or overweight, they might need more water, but they also might not. So it's kind of like it's dependent on the person. And I just keep it real simple initially with food. So eat from the planet, like whole foods. Start cutting back on the processed sugar, the white carbohydrates. If someone's in adrenal fatigue, so essentially that is your stress hormones have burnt out and you're not able to regulate your body very well to stress anymore. So you get stuck in fight flight.
So that's what adrenal fatigue is. You're unable to produce stress hormones?
Initially, so you've got two stress hormones that the adrenals produce. Cortisol is your fight flight response hormone. And then you've got DHEA, which is a balancing stress hormone. So it follows cortisol and brings it back into balance. When someone goes into adrenal fatigue, their body's producing heaps of cortisol initially, and usually it's DHEA that depletes first. So then you don't have a balancing stress hormone being secreted to bring cortisol back down. So you get stuck in fight flight.
So do you dose DHEA to bring down cortisol?
No, that is another one in Australia that we cannot get. Like,
you
if you
can't
we have
get
it,
DHEA?
No.
Yo, it's you should like only move,
through,
Philippa.
Only through a,
that
I know.
Make...
I was trained by Dr. Daniel Kalish, who is a functional medicine practitioner in America, and he's like, DHEA, pregnenolone, progesterone.
You can't give
bioidenticals.
Why would they not want you to be able to provide a bioidentical hormone?
I don't know. It's really annoying. If we have an American client, then they can get it for themselves, you know, because you guys can easily access it.
Pregnenolone is a fascinating thing when you take it. I mean, I feel like that's something I've taken. I just couldn't believe like how little it took to have like life before that dose and life after that dose.
So in Australia, you can only get it through a GP, like a medical doctor. And I so happened to have a friend who had a dad who was a medical doctor, almost about to retire. So he was pretty like free and easy.
Nice.
So for myself, when I was treating my own adrenal fatigue, I actually was able to access pregnenolone and DHEA for myself through a doctor. And it didn't take very long until the body was like, ooh, starting to get my spark back. Ooh, this
like,
feels
who
good.
Who are they trying to help by not allowing people to get that?
It's crazy. There's even natural supplements like herbs that have been taken off the market in Australia as well. Like there's very strict rules.
You are not
rules.
Selling Australia very well right now. I mean, it sounds like a place I'd want to go see, but I don't know now.
Just bring your own.
Bring your own
in your suitcase.
What do you use if you mentioned like helping people wind down to go to sleep? What about for folks, I know this is super common, that don't have trouble falling asleep, but they do get up, get that like 3 or 4 a.m. up and the stress hormones are elevated?
Yeah. From a lifestyle point of view, they've usually tried this already, like deep breathing or, you know, finding like a nice hypnosis.
I don't mean
track.
To get back to sleep. I mean like to stop that, like to not have to wake up.
So that's where it's either coming from a body system imbalance, serotonin. Actually, you know what? That early morning waking is often a detox issue because our liver works the hardest at nighttime between 1 and 4 a.m., and so if you've got issues with detoxing, then the liver's going to have to try and overcompensate to try and detox. And it's very common for people to wake up in those early morning hours when
they've
got detox.
Just because the liver's active or because you have toxins like moving through your body?
Both. But it creates a stress response in the body because the body's trying to get rid of it. The liver's trying to work, but then things are getting blocked up as well. So that's quite a, not that I'd practice Chinese medicine, but that's kind of like it from a Chinese medicine point of view. And I have seen clinically too that when people support their detox pathways, they do sleep better. But also like adrenal fatigue can impact that as well. So as you start supporting the adrenals.
Oh, so getting back to that, if you can't dose those things, we just went on a tangent when I said do you give the DHEA. What do you do for that if you're handcuffed by your government?
Yeah. So it's still totally possible to heal from that. From a supplement point of view, key ones would be vitamin Bs, but you want like vitamin B5 in much higher dosages because B5 is essential for creating DHEA and cortisol. A vitamin C with citrus bioflavonoids can be really helpful as well.
And why is that? What role does vitamin C have in that?
That's more around using it as an antioxidant to support damage done to cells when someone has been in adrenal fatigue. So your body goes into catabolic damage where you start eating away at muscle tissue, minerals from the bone. And so the vitamin C helps as an antioxidant to come and repair, restore, heal the body. Adaptogenic herbs I mentioned earlier as well. So licorice root is really great if you've got low cortisol. Korean ginseng, withania, ashwagandha. And then there's a nutrient called phosgene, is the short name for it. But that's a really good, great nutrient.
Phosphatidylserine?
Yeah, that's it. Yep. So that's really great for bringing down high cortisol. So if you're in earlier stages where you're still producing a lot of cortisol.
Have you ever done tinker with any dietary change to reduce cortisol, like increase carbohydrate or?
Yeah. So we have an adrenal diet. So the premises behind that is take out the main inflammatory foods, so the processed foods. I do start, not everyone needs to be off gluten or soy for the rest of their life, but I do usually take that out as an elimination if a client is a new client. Coffee
is glorious.
Some people may hate me by saying this, but coffee is an artificial stimulant to cortisol. So if we're trying to regulate the stress hormones,
that's why people put sugar in their coffee, Philippa. You laugh. I'm being serious. I think that sugar is very important when you're trying to reduce stress.
I wouldn't put it with coffee, but you do want to increase complex carbohydrates if you're in later stages of adrenal fatigue. Like I've had clients where they've been like strict keto, and again, keto is great for other things, or, you know, low calorie or intermittent fasting. Those things aren't great if you're in deeper adrenal fatigue, because your body, like your blood sugar levels, are often dipping down too low, which again is just another stressor for cortisol.
That's why I'm serious about sugar. I think sugar is very anti-stress. I think cortisol is primarily there to help you increase energy production when you don't have enough sugar. And I think they are inversely related. I think as you provide more sugar, it suppresses that cortisol production, because you don't need the cortisol as much. And I don't think it needs to be complex. In fact, I think the quicker you digest that sugar, the better, the quicker you feel that response.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is common in the functional medicine world, but I think is a very real thing that I've picked up from folks that study like the bioenergetic model of health. And I think they're on to it. And I've experienced a lot of benefits with my stress level just by having more sugar.
That's a cool example that, like, give yourself permission to experiment. It's kind of like, oh, okay, that makes, like, often it must or should. I probably shouldn't say must or should. But if it makes sense to you and it's like, oh, yeah, I've got that thing, and, oh, that makes sense, I'll give it a go. That's sort of my energy with clients as well, where it's like, let's start off with this, but see how you feel. Because essentially what I want to do with clients too is like return them back to themselves, like their own intuition. They are their own self-healer. And a lot of people get really confused around advice on Google or different practitioners or different experts. And it's like, you know what? Just take something. Try it, experiment, don't be attached to the outcome. Just see how your body feels and like listen to your cues. If it works for you, awesome.
Yeah, that's where I am with it. I mean, I used to vilify sugar big time. And I've learned that if I am stressed, if I take a glass of orange juice and put an extra heaping tablespoon of cane sugar, sometimes two, in 5 minutes, I'm just totally chill.
Wow, that's cool.
And I think it's for that reason. I think it's bringing down cortisol directly, because the reason cortisol goes up is oftentimes to, like you said, it's catabolic. It breaks down to make sugar, to help you make sugar.
Yeah.
Which our body is running
on. Do you feel okay after that too? So it's kind of like you feel calm. You don't feel like you get the like blood sugar drop, or you just feel stable for the rest of the day.
Well, the rest of the day, I mean, at some point I'm going to eat again. I don't feel like a big drop. I mean, I used to feel big drops when I would have like a big massive lunch that was like large amounts of all kinds of stuff. Like if I went to a restaurant, if I have like pizza, but I wouldn't have like a slice of pizza like a normal person. I would have half a pizza. And then, yeah, I would feel, you know, 2 hours later like I was in a coma or something. That was like a previous lifetime for me. But now, yeah, I could have a pretty hefty dose of sugar and my body likes it. And
yeah, that's cool.
And it's been very useful tool for me, and surprisingly, it helped other people. And it would have been something I would have poo-pooed for 15 years up until a few years ago when I started to tinker. But I think there's something. There were a lot of things that I felt like I was dealing with that my body was too stressed to, where my body was under a lot of stress. And yeah, some of it was emotional for sure. But I was like using a lot of supplement-based Band-Aids when really I just needed more sugar. I needed more carbohydrate. Like I thought it was good to try to really restrict carbohydrates. And I was misguided on what low carb meant and how many more carbs you could actually have and still be relatively low carb for a long time. And I know there was a lot of people that I've worked with that have experienced this where they're, you know, they've tried a round of keto and they've been like paleo for a long time and they've explored different, like the current health diet, fad, whatever. And then they find themselves in this place where it's like, you're eating like 80 grams of carbs a day and you're in like no man's land. You're not in ketosis and you don't have enough. Like your body needs maybe 150 grams. And if you don't eat it, it's just going to make it with the use of cortisol or adrenaline. Yeah. And so like, just eat it. And that's been like a really big thing for me on dealing with the stress. What I would consider, like when I hear adrenal fatigue, that's what I think of, like over like every day, just this like baseline level of stress that's just too high. And for me, increasing that sugar and the things that people would consider to be like not the good carbs, like the sugary carbs, the honeys, the maple syrups, even cane sugar, have had a very positive impact on like smoothing out that stress and being like just generally more chill.
Yeah.
I like to, and it might not be for everybody, but I think, well, I know it's not just me, but I think there's a lot of people out there that just need to eat more things because their body's constantly trying to make energy. And especially like you say, if you have burnout, if you have this like demanding life where you're juggling all these things, like your brain's using sugar and your brain uses, I don't know, I might botch this, but it's like 20% of the energy, like 20% of the glucose, and it only weighs a couple percent, 2 or 3% of your body weight. So like, even if you're not that physically active, but you have a job where you're like, your thinkery is on and you're like, your cognitive demands are really high. Like you're using sugar all day. And if you don't replete it, then your body's going to like take it from somewhere.
Yeah.
Which is inherently stressful.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something.
When I started playing around with macronutrients, this was like ages ago. My husband used to own a gym. So there are a lot of people that are like, we want macronutrient diets. That helps us like lose weight, doesn't it? Blah, blah, blah. So I experimented with myself and I was initially eating lower carb, not keto, but lower carb. And when I'm like, okay, I'm going to tweak my macronutrients. Oh, this is still a lower carb way of eating, but I ended up eating a lot more carbs, less fat, more protein. And it was crazy how my body responded to that. Like it was almost just like all of a sudden my body's like, okay, we can lose weight now.
Like you had energy.
Yeah, it had energy. And it's like, oh, I felt very full with the amount of food I was eating for the first week or two. But at the 2 week mark, my metabolism was just like, oh, we can like, we're metabolizing this and you're hungry now for your next meal. And I felt great. Like it felt really good.
Yeah, there's something to be said about that. Like there was a while that I almost prided myself that I wasn't hungry, like, especially in the morning, like I intermittent fasted for a long time off and on. And like, I thought it was like, not a badge of honor, but I thought it was like, I was doing a good job because I wasn't hungry till deep in the day. And now I'm like, no, that's not a good sign. Like you should be hungry when you wake up, you haven't eaten in, you know, 8-10 hours. Like your body, if things are going well, should be sending you, hey, we're repleted. Glycogen stores are depleted from your nervous system, like living off of it while you've been sleeping. And it's time to, you know, top off those levels. And it's funny how like culture or society or even sometimes the mirror, because you can lean out low carb, which could give you a signal of health, even though it might not be, could make you think that not being hungry is good.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's not a good way to live. Even like cravings, they're like vilified.
Yeah.
Like that's your body talking to you. Listen,
yeah,
dummy,
My craving these days is often kombucha.
There you go.
It's like, kombucha, kombucha. I'm like, yeah, I need to go get a kombucha. Mmm, yum.
And why do you think that is? Do you think that's your body telling you there's something in there you need? Or is that like feeding just something, a joy thing because you really enjoy them?
Joy, but if it's a, like if it's a want, it's a joy. If it's a craving, it will often be because I've been like doing some deep computer work. And so I'm using up something and my body just wants kombucha. And something salty. So it is like the salty. So when it's not that the kombucha, like it actually, there's not a lot of sugar left in the kombucha, but maybe it's the sweetness of it. And then the saltiness helps to replete after using energy.
Interesting. Couldn't imagine craving kombucha, but it's good to listen to your cravings. Philippa,
I do like chocolate as well.
Yeah, chocolate's fantastic. Anything else you want to touch on today? We kind of were all over the place today.
Yeah, I think in our secular way, we've covered lots, everything.
How do people, what's the best way to find you?
So we have a website, www.chrisandphilly.fm. Probably might want to put that in the show notes because the spelling could go wrong.
We'll do that.
That's our website. We're on socials as well. So chrisandphilly_FM, I think it is, on Instagram, Facebook. The book that we referenced at the start to, Ending Body Burnout, so you can get a copy of that from our website, or it's also sold on Amazon, some bookstores as well, depending on where you're located.
Okay. And they let you sell that in Australia too?
We are allowed to sell books, yes.
How kind of them to offer that
How
to
kind
you.
Of them.
Philippa, I really appreciate you taking the time and reaching out. This has been fun and hope our paths cross in the future. For the listeners out there, always grateful for your listening. Hope you enjoyed the conversation and please share it with someone you think would also enjoy. Have a great day, everyone.